Now, the Bram Weinstein Show on Washington's new home for sports. ESPN 630.
Babies. Hi, everyone. Bram Weinstein Show at ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yingling. Raise the bar at the next generation of light beer. Like to do an early show shout out. I don't do a lot of those, but I'll do one to apparently there's a 10-year-old named Ben. I got texted from a friend last night who says listens to this show every single day and wants to be me. So
what?
Hi, Ben. Love you. Thanks for listening every day.
Wow.
Happy to meet you sometime. I know. I could make a joke about myself here, but I'm just going to take the compliment and just say thank you. And I hope you also get to do some of the things that you wanted to do. Is whatever you're thinking about doing right now at 10, I at 48 and only for a couple more days at 48, I am doing those things. So Ben, if you are listening to me and there's something you want to do, just think long and hard about it and maybe you'll do it. So how about that?
Wow.
How about that as being Mr. Positive today? Mr. Positive.
Takes a child to get you starting things off positive. That sounds about right.
There you go.
Sounds about right.
Hey,
I got to the Wizards in a minute.
I do have to admit,
someone who did mainline sports and just talk in general on the radio, you got to be a good show to be, keeping a 10-year-old's attention, especially these days.
I agree.
I think we'll pat ourselves on the back for that one.
My new nickname is TikTok, baby. I know how to keep y'all attention.
Bram Talk.
That's a good handle. Bram Talk.
Get that before this someone steals it.
Yeah, I want to get that misspelled Pat Mahomes jacket and do some dances in it.
Stop it.
What's that worth? That was misspelled, right? I didn't see that incorrectly.
He was
wearing a jacket where his name was misspelled, correct?
Uh-huh.
He was doing that.
Yes, correct.
You know, Van Der Esch had the wrong jersey on the other day. Did you see that?
No.
His name was misspelled.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's not
good. Leighton Van Der Esch was wearing a jersey where his last name was misspelled. Yeah.
How does that happen these days?
I don't know. I'd be well with him, you know. He's got a weird name, so I could see it.
Still.
He's got a weird name.
How does someone not go, all right, Van Der Esch, let's just double check that to the list. Oh, crap, we spelled that wrong. Let's tear that off and stitch it back.
Uh-huh.
I just don't understand how that happens.
One thing I do want to talk about that is interesting to you and I, and probably nobody else, but I want to bring it up since we talked about it the other day, which was Washington's new stadium and ticket policies and how do we keep people out? And there's a trend in general, you know, around the league. I think you're seeing this everywhere. Like there was a lot of red at that 49ers Cowboys game the other day. The Cardinals game against the 49ers was ridiculous looking.
Yep.
We saw a lot of 49ers fans at the Eagles game earlier this year. Like this is happening.
Packers at the Cardinals game. That Monday night game was crazy.
I'm not trying to whitewash what happened at FedEx Field because it happened over and over and over here too. But like it's happening everywhere and it's kind of a thing that the road fans kind of mobilize and show up at these places. And obviously getting in is no big deal. And if you're going to spend the premium, it's more fun to do it on a road trip. Everybody knows that, right? Like Vegas is going to be dealing with this forever. The road fans are going to invade every single home game that they have because it's fun to go to Las Vegas. And that's the trip everybody wants to take. And they don't care about spending three times face value to get in the door because it's the one trip they're going to take and they're going to go do it. Right. So it's different, you know, than paying the premium for the home game, short of like a playoff game, whatever. So the Titans, like they have a regionally close game, and not that, you know, Bengals Nation is known for traveling, but because Nashville is drivable, you know, from Cincinnati, they're a little concerned about what's going to happen this weekend. And so this is what they've done. They changed their ticket transfer policy this week.
Ooh.
For what they've decided will make it tougher for Bengals fans to purchase the ticket to the game. You cannot transfer a ticket to someone until 24 hours before kickoff now. So if a Bengals fan wanted to buy it from a season ticket holder or someone else who already had it, you know, likely in Tennessee, they'd have to be darn sure that they're going to actually get those tickets transferred to them because they won't have them in hand in any kind of advanced way. So do you think that's enough of a deterrent?
No. It's a four-hour drive. I just looked it up. It's a four-hour drive.
I mean, that's the problem here. It's close.
You could buy tickets that morning and be fine, and that's well within your 24 hours.
Correct. Right, the 24 hours, they like get up at midnight and go, let's find a couple tickets, and you get a couple tickets, and you're like, all right, we're going.
Yeah.
I don't think it's enough of a deterrent to do this. Now, for the, like, if the Rams traveled a lot of people, and it doesn't look like they do, but if they did, I think it'd be a massive deterrent for a game in Tampa.
Sure.
Because you'd have to have the tickets in hand before you're going to fly across the country to go see a game. Right?
You are actually just screwing over your season ticket holders by making as much money as they can, because once that 24-hour period hits, it's either going to go swing one way, the other one way really cheap, or one way really expensive, and there's going to be no
in between. The market's going to move. Going to move big time on this one. I mean, it's going to move big because it's going to be like, there's either going to be a heavy demand 24 hours before from Cincinnati fans, which is going to go from 2X to 3X on these tickets.
Right.
Or there's not going to be a heavy demand and it's just going to be a dud, and you know, people either go or sell their tickets for face value or whatever it is. I am going to guess that, like, there's going to be a somewhat heavy demand, because I would think that Bengals fans think they're going to win this game. So, and it's a 4-hour drive.
It's also the first time they won a playoff game since the early 90s. So, like, they're pumped. They're riding the wave. I don't blame them for doing that.
Bengals fans are the fan base on meth right now. Riding the wave.
And just, like, I don't blame them.
This is unbelievable, right? Like, and it's been crazy for about a month now that Joe Burrow had two games where he threw for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns against playoff teams, right? And then won their playoff game last week. So they're the meth crowd right now, like, kind of can't believe what's going on, and they're going to ride the wave. They're tweaking right now. They're And frankly, like, listen, I think Tennessee's going to win. I do, actually. But if you're Cincinnati, that ain't the Chiefs or the Bills. Like, you're not thinking you're losing. I don't think you're thinking you're losing this weekend. So I can see where, you know, if Cincinnati has a bunch of people that do want to travel and it is regionally close and you can just jump in a car and go there because it's not a big deal, I think that market might skyrocket on them. And this whole note transfer it within 24 hours, I actually think the people who have the tickets are going, oh, yes. Like, now we know there's going to be massive demand at the last minute, which is going to raise these prices up.
I would, in fact, say now, like, if you were a Cincinnati fan, you probably weren't even thinking about going to the game. And now you're like, oh, wow, it is way closer than I thought. Yeah, maybe that's a good idea. Like, I think you're probably putting some Cincinnati fans that hadn't even thought about it to just be pushed in and doing it. I'm gonna just say this right now. I got onto StubHub, typed in the game, selected the two cheapest tickets, and it's still telling me I can just buy them and they'll be delivered to me electronically. So,
yes, this happens with, that's true. If you go through StubHub, what they're saying is if you go through the NFL marketplace, you can't transfer them.
But everything else works.
If you go through an independent contractor like StubHub or has a partnership and you're allowed to do it, there's no stopping it from happening. All I'm saying is, like, this is what I'm saying the other day. At some point, the NFL needs to wrap its hands around this and why they've allowed the outside market to control something that's a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. I kind of don't get it. And considering everything's digital, I don't know why they're not the ones profiting from the resales and why they're letting someone else profit.
Well,
they are.
They're double dipping on all those fees. They get to charge
fees.
They get to charge for all the, and the fees is the fees. The fee price is a percentage of how much the ticket sells for. So they're double dipping for when you buy your season ticket holders, when you buy your season tickets, you pay that stupid fee that is nothing that goes right to the team. And then they also make a percentage of whatever the hell the fee is again when you sell it to somebody, and that's nothing. It costs them nothing to do that. You're doing all the work. So I mean, I get what you're saying, but once again, it's the consumer that actually is doing all the work. They don't have to do anything about it.
I don't know what the answer is. There's some answer here that alters. I don't know why I'm trying to help the NFL teams, but like, there's some answer here. And I think really the goal, though, is not just to sell them for the most amount of money. The goal is to try to get as many of your home fans into these stadiums as possible. And here are the Titans outwardly saying out loud, we're worried that a bunch of people wearing orange are going to show up to our game. Just like last week, Dallas was worried that a lot of people in red were going to show up. Matthew Stafford's wife was begging Rams fans to show up to the first playoff game because she was worried that all these Arizona Cardinals fans that were in regionally close were going to show up. It's everywhere. How do they get their hands around it? I don't know. Does that matter? I don't know. I like home field advantages, I guess. I like seeing all the Buffalo people in the Buffalo Stadium. I like seeing all the Chiefs people. I think it's even funnier, like, when a team like that loses at home and all of those people are all shocked at the exact same time. But I also know that my most fun sporting experiences have been away games rooting for my team.
Right.
Like, there's kind of nothing like going in there and beating them. You know, and as long as you're not in the sociopath stadium, like, it's cool and it's fun and it's an incredibly memorable experience. Like, I went to a road Washington playoff win at the Eagles in the early 1990s. And despite, like, except for the fact that I thought someone was going to murder me on the way out of the stadium, that was the maybe the most memorable game I've ever been to, because we won there and I was there to see it. And there's nothing like the energy of that home crowd knowing their season's over. There's nothing like that. Nothing.
I mean, I'll just say Game 7 Astros Nats was pretty much injected into my veins any day of the week, and it'll wake me right up.
You can't possibly go to a better experience than that.
Yes,
you can't. Unlike the Stanley Cup thing, like, if you were in Vegas when the Caps won there,
they took over Vegas. There's a ton of Caps fans there.
That was fun. Right, that was fun for the post game. But my point is, like, those Astros fans, people, they showed up, I'm sure, thinking they were going to win because they have a really, really, really good team. You know, like, I think the Vegas people, one, it was new to them, and two, I think that they knew what the score was once they got around to game five, and it was over, and then, you know, so it's a different situation. You went to the favorite in the World Series, lost at home in game seven, and you got to witness it live. You're not going to beat that.
Correct.
Like, you really aren't going to beat
that. The best part was in it, talking with fans in the pregame, and everybody was very nice in Houston. I always want to say that. Like, one of the best experiences as an away fan across any sport, that was game seven of the World Series. I would have understood the venom. There was none thrown at me in pregame. And all of them had the same thing to say. They were almost happy that the Nats forced a... that the Astros won game three, four, and five because they wanted to see them win the World Series at home. That's what all of them were saying. They were like, we didn't want them to get bounced or lose. We wanted them to win the World Series at home. So we're happy that these games are here. And I'm like, I would not be happy that this thing's going to a game seven. But no, I'm with you. Home, like, going to those types of games are, you know, one of the best experiences. Once again, though, I'll just say this. The NFL can't wrap its hands around the internet. You can't have it both ways, where the market is set by everyone in the country and then close it down when you want to. That's the problem here.
I hear you.
And so, you know, if I'm like, here's an example, too. I think here's a great example at FedEx Field. Do the optics look bad on a lot of home games? Yeah. But if you're Snyder or the NFL, do you want those seats to be empty or filled with other NFL fans? I mean, it's pick your poison, but I'm going to go with they probably want the seat filled and people at least buying beers and food and whatever during the game, and that's the problem there.
Let me ask this question then, okay? Yeah. Because I would think that the same phenomenon would happen in college football, like, especially in the SEC. Like, why don't a lot of Auburn fans invade Tuscaloosa? Like, how does that not happen?
I mean, that's a good question.
Why are there not a ton of Alabama fans in the swamp when they play them? Like, I don't understand how that doesn't happen there, because the kids have control of the tickets. Couldn't they flip those tickets for a ton of money? Like, is it the same theory in practice?
No, this is what I was touching on yesterday, like with the Terps. I know when I was in college and I had friends at College Park that you basically couldn't transfer your ticket. Like, it was linked to your student ID on your, like, wallet on Apple or whatever the swipe-in system was. So there was no way for you to, quote, sell your ticket because you had a GA ticket to wherever you were supposed to be sitting due to however many games you'd went to. I also know, this is where I got the idea from yesterday, was if you wanted to go to the, let's say you want to go to the Maryland Duke game. You couldn't just sign up to go to the Duke game. You had to attend the Maryland George Mason game a couple weeks back. And that didn't stop some kids from literally swiping their student ID to go into the game and then leaving right away. They just wanted to get the loyalty. So what you had to do was show up to a bunch of those games, and then you got priority to go to that Duke game, that UNC game, whatever the priority one was, you built that up. So I'm going to guess you can't actually sell your tickets in a lot of cases for those SEC schools. I'm going to guess it's the same thing. It's either you use it or it goes to someone else trying to swipe in later in the day anyways. So that's the only thing I could think of. Like, there's no transfer of it.
This is what I'm trying to say about the pros. There's got to be a way around of this transfer thing. The colleges have a handle on it. Like, don't a bunch of Alabama fans want to show up and go to the Florida game, but it's impossible to get into it because you can't get the tickets into the swamp? Well, there's got to be a way to do, right? I don't know. All right. Anyway, I think there's a solution here. And if you figure it out, if you figure it out on behalf of a professional sports league, do you know how much money that's worth? Because this is a multi-billion dollar industry, the resale market.
Here's honestly the bigger issue at hand with all of this. We have put such a mark on the Super Bowl, right? Or of a championship, if we don't want to use football. Titans fans are thinking, I bought this ticket for the playoffs for $125 or $150, and I can resell it for $300 to $400. And it's not even the AFC Championship game yet. I'm going to take that money and push it towards a possible Super Bowl ticket or travel or whatever. I think that that's the main problem right now, is that we have put such an emphasis on a championship, as we should. But if you're a ticket holder that wants to do something bigger and better, you don't actually partake every step of the way. And I think that's the other problem. People are looking at it and they're going, I can make too much money off this. And then if they lose, I'm not going to make anything, you know, and I'll just be at the game. So I think that's another issue with it as well. It's gotten so expensive to go to a Super Bowl or even a championship game
that
they're looking at
to go to
that.
Any professional sporting event.
For sure.
It is.
And so they're looking really to cash expensive. in some cases. Yeah. And I don't blame people for that. That's the other thing I say about FedEx Field. I don't blame people for selling their tickets because there's only three profitable games a year for the most part. So, yeah, I think the other problem is people push it and they want to push it towards either that or their tickets the next year too. If you sold, you know, the Cowboys game this year, you're paying for like 30-35% of your season next year push it right towards. And that's, I don't blame people for that. So that's
a lot of people sold the Cowboys tickets would always, I had season tickets forever. They would sell for 3-4 times if you wanted to.
Yeah.
They would pay for the majority of your season if you sold your Cowboys tickets, which is why. And it didn't matter what year it was. It was always the case. Eagles tickets would sell for 2-3 times. And shockingly, and I would tell people this all the time, Giants tickets never did.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know why. I never really understood it, but the Giants tickets would never have an inflated market for Giants. You would think with all the New Yorkers who live here and how easy it is to come down here, they don't travel like that. They don't show up like that. They have a huge, large fan base, but they don't do that.
Yep.
Like the Washington fans travel, the Philly fans travel, the Dallas fans are all over the place. Mm-hmm. They're kind of ubiquitous. Like their fans don't. Like, go check any road game. You won't see a bazillion Giants fans like littered throughout. They don't do that. And it's more emblematic here. You will not see a lot at FedEx. You'll see some, but you won't see a lot. Not like Cowboys or Eagles. In the same way, you'd see a lot more Washington fans in New York than you will see New York fans in Washington. Mm-hmm. That they'll go up there and get those tickets.
No, I mean, anyway. When I got our suite tickets here at the station, like, obviously I have season tickets, so I sold my Giants tickets. They were well below face value. I mean, it was the only... You looked at the market, and you're like, well, I'm going to take a little bit of a bath on that one, and I did. Eagles ones I sold for face value this year, like, just because that one didn't have as much interest, you know, because it was at the end of the year. And then Cowboys, I didn't sell. I should have, honestly. I would have paid for a lot of my season, but, you know, I just decided not to. That's a game I wanted to go to. So, anyway.
Yep. Here you go. All right. You went to the game last night, Wizards and Nets, down at Old Cap 1. I watched most of the second half. I thought, because I've now gotten used to this, I thought they were going to hit one of those two shots at the end of the game. I thought they were. I mean, especially when Kuzma got the look. I'm so used to it now. He's hit the clutch gene for me that when he got that look, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to steal this game from Brooklyn. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. I thought late they played really, really well. They did everything possible to possibly win. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I don't know what the hell the refs are thinking with that assistant coach.
Insane.
You know, hitting. It's totally insane. And then what? Can you not look at that? Is that the rule? Like, can you not replay that? Because the replay was so obvious what happened. I don't know how they didn't go back, call a technical foul on him. Like, I don't, like, they go back and look at all sorts of things on video replay. How did they not come around to assessing a technical foul against Brooklyn last night? Like, I don't know what happened.
I have no idea, especially with the amount of replays they were reviewing last night. Like, an abnormal amount of reviews. Then there was also coaches challenge. I saw more reviews yesterday than the previous three Wizards games I've been to combined. And so I was shocked when they didn't actually, you know, whistle down that they were going to review what happened, and they didn't. And lo and behold, there would have been a technical, and the Wizards lost by one. I mean, it was literally a difference maker. It was literally a difference maker last night.
It was, and I'm still like, I'm confused as to, considering everything else that they can look back at, why they didn't look back at that and see clear as day that that had happened, and that should have been a technical foul assessed immediately, and you know, no one would have complained about it and said that was wrong. I don't know what that guy was thinking when he did that.
I don't know.
Anyway, so there's that one. There were a couple other things I actually loved late. Well, one, I got to say this. Kyrie Irving looks fine.
He may not have played. So right.
I know. Like he may have missed most of the season, but he looks totally like himself.
Yep.
So yep. If anyone was wondering, like, if all the rigmarole with the vaccines and not playing and the controversy and all that affected his game, if last night's any indication, it didn't. Yep. And so I think more and more, it does look like they would be better served being a road team in the playoffs because he'd be able to play more games. And clearly, he's still who we thought he was. So he's nasty. Man, he is nasty.
There are a few guys that can do it, and he was one of them last night. Where, like, even though majority of the house was rooting for the Wizards, he would make a couple moves and make someone look stupid, and the whole place would just be like, oh, my God. Like, how do we even stop that? So...
No.
Yeah, I'm with you. He looked great. I mean, that was on. I like to do this, like any sporting event you go to, you kind of take away after you've been at the game in a close one like that. You'd like to take a step back and like kind of appreciate what you just watched. And that's what it was last night for me. I was like, I can't believe some of the things he was still doing. He looked completely fine, like he had been playing all season long, and just made the Wizards look like idiots.
Yeah,
at times
he was awesome.
Night.
Now, late, I will say this. This was a very positive thing. Beal had a great stop on him late in the game.
Yeah, that was great.
Great defensive stop on him. Defensively, they were pretty good down the stretch. I mean, I know the score doesn't look it, but like down the stretch, they were making stops when they had to, and they were making plays on the other end, and Beal is deferring to Kuzma late. Like he's not trying to take over a game, so he's totally, at least last night, against a top-level team, on board with, I don't have to be the closer. He did assert himself a little bit more late and made a couple of key buckets, but when push came to shove, he threw the ball to the open man and got open looks and kept them alive. So, like, you know, I guess it's a roundabout way of saying I do like this team a lot. I know that there's a ceiling on them, you know, like, but I do like this team a lot. And it's too bad they didn't steal that last night because it was there for the taking. They were getting run early by them, but I love the comeback. And, you know, I saw the postgame presser, a little bit of this third in line coach who's taken over because of all the COVID stuff that's going on with their coaching staff. He's Steady Eddie, that guy. Like, I don't know if you heard him. But he took everything in stride. Yeah. It all sounded like he's got a handle on the whole thing. I like him. You know, like, it was just one of those things. Like, you don't get to meet people like this publicly because when do they ever do interviews? You know, and like, when would you ever ask him about anything? But I got to tell you, this guy's represented himself really, really well in these moments. And they kicked the 76ers butt the other day, and they easily could have won last night, you know, against the Nets. So, you know, golf clapped it at due to our Harlem Globetrotter coach, who's like, seems to have it together. You know what I mean?
I saw a couple tweets responding to, I think it might have been Chris Miller who quote retweeted one of them or whatever. And a couple of the comments were like, yo, Terps, take a look at this dude. You want to go outside the box? Let's see what this guy would bring to college hoops. So I thought that was pretty funny too. I saw that right after the game.
Speaking of, we'll get to that in a bit. Jeff Ehrman from 247 Sports going to join us, and we're going to talk about what in the world is going on with their coaching search and what they're looking at. And his latest piece is they're playing footsie with Bruce Pearl potentially. So we'll see. So we'll talk, which, you know, to me, honestly, that's a pretty good answer. I know it's short term, and I know that he's a used car salesman, but he's a really good one, and they kind of need that right now to get things back on track.
Right.
So we'll talk to him about all that. Anyway, I thought what happened last night, I thought was very promising. I mean, there they were toe to toe with this team. I know a loss. They were getting whooped. They came back, and once again, late in the fourth quarter, I know they didn't hit the big one right at the end of the game, and they had two. I'm not going to blame Dinwiddie. He had to just toss one up at the buzzer, but like, they had two shots at it, and they were in it to win it. And so I just, you know, this team is deep. I like them. You know, I think there's a ceiling on them, but I like them, and I like what I see here. And I right now, as we stand here, I'm interested in the playoffs with them. Who they get, who they face, how they perform, what's the high level, you know, what's the high end number for them?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not delusional. I think if they get into a series with these guys or get into one with the Bucks or something like that, like, I don't think they're beating them, but I'd be very interested to see what seed they get, who they match up with, and what it looks like in the first round with them. I like what I see.
No, I agree. I was taking that away. Taking that away last night as well, and you can tell they're still trying to get their rotations down with all of the new pieces they've got. I mean, it's like every time there's a sub in on the floor, it's guys that can play. I mean, and that's not a problem, but it is a bit of a problem when you need to figure out the rotation. So the fact that they're also, it's a little bit of a growing pain. Like, they did great against the 76ers the other day, blew them out, but this was another one last night where you kind of tell on the floor they all weren't in sync, because there are so many, you know, more pieces that are kind of being rotated up and throughout. So you know, it's a good problem to have. It's just when you play a team like the Nets, they're probably going to pick you apart a little bit more than you would like, and that's what I think ultimately happened last night. Still almost came back, but they were picked apart pretty early, and I think they were down by 15 at one point. So
Here's where I am in my maturation as a Wizards fan. Almost is good enough for me. You know, almost good enough for me.
Fair enough.
Take it.
I'll tell you what,
the other people will be like, you know, Durant didn't play. And I'll be like, yes, yeah, I know. Yeah, Durant I know. Didn't play yes, last night. Yeah. I'm aware of that. Yeah, I'm aware. So, whatever. How's crowd last night? It was, you know, on TV, it looked a little sparse, actually, for Brooklyn being there. It looked a little sparse. I mean, you would have thought a lot of those tickets should have been purchased before Durant got hurt. So I'm a little surprised, actually.
I think sparse is the word I would use. Not the most dead I've seen Capital One Arena, but I'm with you. I expected, you know, Brooklyn's in town. Even if KD's not playing, Harden and Kyrie are playing. Wizards have a full deck. It was not as full as I thought. And, you know, my use of judgment is this, you know, as you've noted on the show, my girlfriend can find street parking in D.C. We found it last night, and we did not expect to find it on a night where they're playing the Nets. So right away, I was like, ooh, this isn't good.
Uh-oh.
Like,
yeah,
I was like, this isn't good that we actually found.
And I found a spot across the street from the arena. That's not good.
Yeah, pretty
it's
much.
It's got to be. I think people are eating their tickets because it's Omicron. I think that's what it is. People don't want to go out. That's all. And the weather forecast again was, it might snow 50 inches or none, and the answer is none, you know. But my kids got off of school anyway. Thanks, meteorologists. Really appreciate the accuracy of the last 24 hours.
I will say this too, and you're gonna laugh at me, but the crossover of sports fan, I don't care any sport, and wrestling fans is really big. That crossover, like, you usually like both, or there are a lot that like both. AEW was at the Entertainment and Sports Arena across town, and it was sold out completely. So I will say, there's a percentage of the fan base that would have probably been there last night, but they were at wrestling instead. And I was one of the ones debating which one to go to. So that was also part of it. There was another event in town, that's not on people's radar, but it really was.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think it's the Omicron thing. I have to think that, because
combination of all it could be. Yeah.
Well, the crowds were robust early in the year, and now they suddenly aren't. Like, I don't know. That's got to be the pandemic. Yeah. It has to be.
I will say.
What other reason could you really have? Not with a premier opponent like that. Like, come on. You know, like, those tickets always sell no matter what when you're playing a team like that. You get stars like that showing up here. So I don't know.
I will say this. It was my first time dealing with them since vaccinations had to be required, and it was super smooth. So kudos to the, you know,
yeah,
because
28 people were there.
The lines to get in were still pretty full though, as they usually are. But it was really smooth to do all that. So kudos.
You'll be very proud of me. I just secured some early puck drop Caps tickets for March. So I'm going to round up the kids and make them go see the Capitals play. Cap Stars, baby.
Oh, that's a good one.
Stars, baby.
Get to see old Holtz.
Oh, Holtz, until we trade for him. Maybe not.
Right? No, you'll get to see Marc-Andre Fleury versus Braden Holtby.
That's right.
He'll be in a Caps uniform.
True. All right. We have a nice little throwback Thursday that will start next. I don't want to give it away. No spoilers on that. It is Wizards related, though, so I guess that is a mild spoiler. But you'd have to guess the year, and how are you going to do that? This isn't Wordle. I'm giving you no other hints. And we'll get into a LeBron James once again refusing to take any responsibility or wants no comment on anything that's happening with his decision making. And we'll do that next. Bray, watch the show. ESPN 630 Sports Capital. This is I'm Blue, but who's this by?
Eiffel 65. How could you forget?
We'll never remember that. This is 22 years old? Uh-huh. This is 22 years old?
Yeah.
My kids know about this. This has become what, like a meme song? Is this in Fortnite or something? Like, why do I hear this? My kids know this song.
I mean, it's a catchy techno song. I don't think they ever go away, really, do they? I mean,
Eiffel 65. Okay. Okay, are we going to get to the spoken word part of it, or are we going to dip out of that before that actually happens?
No. I'll dip out of it.
Dip out of it? Yeah. All right. Okay, so let's see if we can play Wordle here with all of you. Can you figure out why that we're doing something with the Wizards that happened 22 years ago, and 22 feels very symbiotic, because guess what's happening on 2-2? What a meandering way around to get through Washington sports this week on Throwback Thursday. If you can't guess it, 22 years ago is when Michael Jordan became the president of basketball basketball operations of the Washington Wizards at the time. This precedes him returning as a player. You'll recall he went through an entire season as just the front office executive. And then when nothing he was doing was working and his pick of Kwame Brown blew up in his face very badly, he decided there's really one way to fix this. And I know how to sell some tickets, put on a Wizards jersey and go play with these guys. And that ended up happening. I do have the piece from the Washington Post. Would you like to hear the summation of the things that were happening?
Yes, sure. I'm sure it's optimism all around.
22 years ago today, this piece ran in the Washington Post. And here's a funny byline. Steve Weiss, who's been covering the NFL forever, basically on NFL Network, was the person who covered one of the people. Everybody covered this that day. When that was surreal, actually. If I were like, because I was year 2000. That was my first year on the beat with the Washington football team. That was maybe one of the most surreal things that's ever happened in Washington sports was him showing up as a part owner slash president of basketball operations. And everybody who was anybody was in the room that day to watch it, almost just even just to gawk at it that he was there and doing this.
Right.
And this is what Steve Weiss wrote about his press conference that day. Showing the command that allowed him to dominate the National Basketball Association for 13 years, Michael Jordan set the tone for his new job as president of basketball operations and part owner of the Washington Wizards yesterday, saying he would answer only to majority owner Abe Pollin, that his influence would be felt throughout the organization, and that, quote, until we get ourselves on track, everybody is disposable. After a 5-month courtship, Jordan finalized the deal early yesterday, meaning that that would give him 5 years to help transform the Wizards, who had not won a playoff game in 12 years, into a winner. Jordan said that Wes Unseld will remain the team's general manager and Susan O'Malley would continue as the CEO and president of business operations. Susan O'Malley, of course, famously on these airwaves and previous airwaves, was the foil for Tony Kornheiser forever and his terminology of Le Boule, which was really directed at her and the way that she ran the business operations and how they tried to sell tickets when they had crappy team after crappy team team. Said Jordan, I'm going to have my imprints and footprints all over this organization. I look forward to turning this thing around. Right now, we're an underachieving team. He did admit, though, he will continue to commute between Washington and his home in Chicago, which became a really, really, really big deal because when they didn't turn it around, everybody went, yeah, well, he's never here. He's always in his house.
That's right.
The deal gave him an equity share that if he had met all of the benchmarks, he would have been a 20% owner of the Washington Wizards when Abe Pollin decided to sell. He bought a stake from Lincoln Holdings, which was the group that was, I don't know if they still call themselves this, but like that's the original Ted Leonsis group that ended up buying into the ownership of all this stuff. And Jordan's stake was not just in the Wizards. It was in the arena, in the Capitals, in everything.
Huh.
Which is kind of, you know, I don't know, strange.
Yeah.
You know, apparently he had tried to buy other teams and had failed in all of that. And I guess he looked into buying the Bucks, the Nuggets, the Grizzlies, and oddly the Charlotte Hornets initially that ended up going, they ended up going to New Orleans and the expansion team was the Bobcats. And then he ended up buying the Bobcats from Bob Johnson, the former executive. Pollin said this of Michael Jordan that day, he makes everybody better. He's a fierce competitor. He will not accept losing. He's going to get the best out of everybody. And that's why I've turned the basketball operations over to him. When this happened, when he said that, there's not a single person that didn't believe that that was going to be true. And oddly, that didn't even come close to happening. It is one of the parts of his legacy that I find really, really interesting. And it continues to this day where he finally does have, as the owner of the Hornets, a competitive team that looks like a playoff team, that looks like a team kind of on the rise, that has, you know, one star in LaMelo Ball and two others in Bridges and who am I missing? Bridges that like where you're like that's the foundation of a really good team, you know, like, and they've got parts and they look like they're going to be competitive and they're going to be a problem, you know, as they go along. First time in his tenure, I've been saying this forever, I think one of the most underrated things in sports is Michael Jordan has been a wildly failed executive for 2 decades since taking over. He is, in my opinion, and it's not even arguable, the greatest player that's ever played this game, the most fierce competitor, the most, you know, world-altering presence, maybe in sports, but definitely in basketball. And yet, when he tried to transition over to management and executive stature, it hasn't worked at all. In fact, it's been an abject failure. Maybe up until now, where the Hornets look like they might be pretty good.
No, so we'll and it's like they haven't tried to get better either. They have been one of those teams that seems to wade in mediocrity. And then, you know, they got lucky with the ball pick, and it seems like they've got a roster that's worth you know, throwing out there. But yeah, you're right. Like, largely, it's not only that he's failed, but like, they haven't tried to get better either. And how does that guy not recruit? You know, like, you're Michael Jordan. You'd think it would work, and it hasn't.
That's been my problem all along. The whole time I'm like, you're Michael Jordan. Yeah. How do you not have the best players constantly coming in here and wanting to play for you?
That's right.
It's amazing. How about this famous last words quote from that day? I won't be wearing the Wizards uniform. I have an attitude about the way I play. I have an attitude about the way I win. And my job and responsibility with this organization is to see if I can pass it on to the players in that uniform. That lasted about 12 months. Right. And then he decided, well, forget that one. This is what we're going to have to do. Abe Pollin gave all the credit to Ted for making it happen. He said, without Ted, this would not have happened. Ted was the guy that started all of it. He's the guy who contacted Michael in the beginning, which now I'll go back to. Ted, you were able to pull that off. Why aren't you courting the other stars around the league to come play with other stars here? You clearly know how to mingle with the Illuminati of all of this. How do we not get people? If you could get Michael Jordan to become the president of basketball operations and then eventually play for this team, why can't you get Kevin Durant to come play with Beal and Wall? Like, what are we doing here? Come on. Oh, man. Amazing.
I mean,
the status of Coach Gar Hurd was in question at the day.
It's funny, though. Ted not only got Michael Jordan to come here, he got like Jaromir Jagr to come here from the Penguins as well. Like, that's two major superstars of their day. I know Jagr is not MJ, but he was the hottest free agent in hockey, or, you know, I guess trade in that part, in that sense. Jagr wasn't a free agent signing, but yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that what one, happened, you know, Ted? Are you losing your fastball? What's going on here?
Maybe he got scared off because of those incidents. Like the same thing when they got Jagr, there isn't a single person on earth that didn't think, oh my God, like, that is a humongous deal that's going to make them a lot better.
That's right.
And I don't blame Ted for that. I blame Jagr.
Of course. And Jagr's admitted to it.
He was like half trying when he was playing for them.
Yeah.
And then he had a breakup with a girlfriend, and he told everybody he was so sad about it. It affected his play. And it was, I've never seen anything like this. Like, a superstar player, it was like he just regretted coming here. And so much so that he couldn't even try hard. That's not Ted's fault. Like, that's not. Like, he did right by this guy. The guy was in the prime of his career. He should have been, you know, leading goal scorer like he'd been in Pittsburgh forever, and he just wasn't when he played here. So much so that it looked like he wasn't even trying some nights. There was a little Albert Haynesworth going on there with Jaromir Jagr. Really.
I stand corrected. It was a free agent signing with Jagr. But yeah, totally. And they had to trade him halfway through his contract. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah.
One other NBA story I want to get to today, since we're talking about Jordan and, of course, the greatest player since him. I guess you could argue could be Kobe Bryant, but I would also argue is LeBron James, who is still out there and playing. And this year is really not going very well. And Russell Westbrook was benched last night. Frank Vogel, there's reports saying that he, quote, got the green light to do that, which means because he's coaching day to day for his job, he can't even make decisions on the bench without making a call up to the front office to say, if I do this, is everybody going to be okay with me doing this? Because I feel like I need to do this. And then LeBron James, after the game, was asked about the benching of Russell Westbrook. And you'll see clearly he wants nothing to do with taking any accountability for any of this. So listen to LeBron James here.
How was Russ after the game? Is that the sort of thing that bothers him?
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
Not as closely as you have, probably.
Okay. Have you followed Russ throughout this season? Yeah. Would you think that would bother Russ not being in the late game?
I would imagine.
Okay. There goes your answer.
I'm not in that business of pointing fingers or pointing blame or trying to
put a quote at the end or at the start of somebody's someone's commentator of what they feel, you know, our coaching staff or Frank is or where Russ is or where I'm at or AD. If it's not positive for me, it's not my lane. I'm not a negative person. You got something to ask me besides trying to show somebody I answer those.
Okay. So that is, I have nothing to do with any of this. I wash my hands of it.
That's right.
Which could it be further from the truth?
You are the one that wanted him here, guy, and traded all of your roster to get him.
You're the guy who pulled the trigger on that trade. So I don't know why you can't now take the responsibility for all of it. Like, this is a sign of his future is not being the president of basketball operations of an organization. Because, I'm sorry, that signing was not Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss's idea. That one was your idea. They said okay to you for it because you assured them that this is what was going to work out in the short term for a couple of years with you and AD to remain a championship-level team, if not bring rings to Los Angeles. They did this for you, and I would have to think against Pelinka's better judgment because even if you think it's the right thing to do, you know the Wizards are getting over on you with this deal. You know it. You're giving away too many parts, too many pieces, too many guys who can play. Are any of them first ballot Hall of Famers like Russ? No.
Right.
But you can't win with three. Big three is one thing. You can't win with a big three and literally nobody else.
That's right.
Like, and that's what they're almost trying to do at this point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He, for him to sit up there and go, I don't have anything to do with this. I'm not pointing fingers. You know, they're going to do whatever they want to do. When you're the one that pushed the boulder down the hill to start with. Wow, man. Like, I think he should be answering questions about this. Mm-hmm. I think he's directly responsible for this. And so he made a mistake. Own up to it, dude. Like, own up to it. And what, he doesn't want to kill Russ publicly. But why can't he say, I'm the one who wanted this. I spearheaded this. I thought it was the right idea. The season's not over. We'll see what happens, you know, but like, obviously it hasn't gone that well yet. As far as the coach, he's allowed to make whatever decisions he wants to make. But he doesn't do any of that. He doesn't do any of it.
To be fair, he could also just pull the, well, what we've been doing all year hasn't worked. So clearly we're trying to do something else. Yes. And that's also a good, that's a good explanation. Now, and I know it's not what anyone wants to hear, but that's probably really what it is too.
That soundbite is don't look at me.
That's right.
That's what it is. It's don't look at me.
You know who's blaming? Only when I want you to look at me.
You know who he's blaming for bad reviews of Space Jam? Bugs Bunny. That's who he's blaming for it.
That's right.
Yeah. I can't control what Elmer Fudd says. It's like, oh my God. I'm positive. Like, oh, okay. Right. Like as if you had nothing to do with all of the beginning parts of this. Like, come on, man. Like, take some responsibility. Right, like, right. Please, come on. All right, take a quick break. Bray, watch the show. He's been 6:30 Sports Capital. I'm from 22 years ago. We chose the year 2000 as Throwback Thursday because yesterday, 22 years ago, Michael Jordan officially became the president of basketball operations of the Washington Wizards, and 22 feels like the right number to go with because of 2-2-22. That is happening for the Washington football team, et cetera, whatever their name is going to be. I'm not going to make jokes.
Did you see the full-blown galaxy brain tweet by the Washington football team?
I liked that. I did. I enjoyed that. Yeah, yeah, the social team's gotten good. They're having fun.
Yeah.
All right. The other announcement locally today is that we do have a new color analyst for the Nationals games on Masson. It's Kevin Franzen, who played here for what, a year? Something like that?
Yeah, played last year. The last year he played in the majors was 2014. Went on that playoff run with them. Famously was pouring beer down Dan Colco's throat, where Colco said, wrong pipe, and he screamed back at him, there is no wrong pipe. So now they're going to be working together 8 years later. Yes.
Yikes.
What do you mean, okay. Yikes? No, it was a great moment. It was hilarious. Okay. It was amazing. Like, Colco took it in stride. It was great. It was a hilarious moment on Masson's, like, I think they had clinched the playoff spot in 2014. So it was, you know, your typical everyone's, you know, chugging beer in the clubhouse type moment. And yeah, that was the moment that came from it. And now Franzen going to do color with Bob Carpenter.
So the last couple of years he was with the Phillies, he was doing the radio broadcast with the Phillies for the last couple of years. He had played there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's totally inexperienced at this. So he's going to know what he's doing, which is good. All right. I got to tell you, I'm surprised by the choice because he has not a pretty distinct link to this team. So I'm surprised today that this is where they land. Not that I don't know whether he's going to be good at this or not. I'm just surprised that this is the name they landed on. That's all.
I think there's some layers to this one. I think they probably talked with Ryan Zimmerman as long as they could talk with him. If he wanted the job, it was probably his. And clearly, he was not ready to answer that. So they had to go in a different direction. I think that's a bare minimum of what it was. And I also think...
On that, by the way, I'll get to your second point in a minute. On that, my read on this was is Zimmerman has told them he is not retiring.
Correct. That's what I think as well. Because if he was, I think they would actually go with a Justin Maxwell, Michael Moore, some kind of filler. And this is bringing me to my second point is that they went with someone who's done this with, he's been doing it on the radio broadcast, which for all intents and purposes, is probably harder to do, than it is on TV. And so they went with a steady hand and they also went with someone I like this that did play for the Phillies, did play here, but clearly still has to keep up, you know, or has kept up with the NL East. It brings in someone into the fold that really has been paying attention. And so it's not someone out of the blue like Michael Morse, who was really on the West Coast, and then Maxwell, who honestly was in school, and I don't know how much he was paying attention, but this is a steady hand hire, and I like it. Like, it seems to me it was a smart, solid hire. I don't know how great he's going to be with Bob, but I like it. I will say that. I don't really have much else besides that. I'm also just excited, and I said this last year when FP was off the broadcast. I'm excited for a refresh into the Masson broadcast. I get it. Whatever your opinion was of FP, whether you loved him or hated him, it had been so long that we were getting the same anecdotes, the same stories, the same, you know, five stories he had about certain major league stops along the way. That's not his fault, but if you're like me and you mainline baseball, you've heard it all before, and there's just only so much you've got. And Franzen now is going to bring all of those into the fold, where he played for the Nats for a year. He played for the Phillies for a few years. He's going to have some clubhouse stories that I can't wait to kind of hear along the way. And honestly, they're going to need them. They're going to be terrible next year. So they're going to get into story time quite a bit in that broadcast.
I hear you. And the franchise still is, you know, in terms of like finding, you know, names that have come through their system, they still are very young.
Yep.
You know, they still haven't been around long enough where it's like obvious. To me, this was Ryan Zimmerman's job if he wanted it. And maybe there's a couple things going on. Maybe he doesn't want to stop playing and maybe he doesn't want to do it. You know, like,
yeah, I thought that too. Like, why would you not retire and then have to travel with the team all over again? You know, I don't know that would be the case. Yeah.
Once I saw that they hired this guy who had a gig doing this for a Major League Baseball team, it tells me, like, I would think that he's saying, I don't want to do this for 1 year. You know, like, I want some assurances that this isn't like a test drive until Ryan Zimmerman decides he wants to do it. And then you kick me out and they can't promise him anything like that. But it does feel like one or both of those things are true, that he either wants to continue playing and secondarily, even if he didn't, he doesn't want to do this job. So, okay, that's fine. That's his prerogative. I think he'd be a perfect fit for something like this. But obviously, because of his tenure with the team, and everyone's going to want to hear what he has to say about them. And then I'm like, okay, well, who are the other, if he doesn't do it, who are the other people that are retired that might be good at it? And the list of names is kind of short, honestly, if you really think about it, even with the success that they've had, unless Howie Kendrick wants to do something like this, or Jason Wirth wants to do something like this. And, you know, if you don't get someone like that, then you end up here. And I'm not trying to splash cold water in this, and I'm sure this guy's going to do well. What I always hope in these scenarios is you get somebody who screams the organization, and this guy doesn't. So I hope he does a good job, and I'm not like rooting against him or anything, but you know, I was hoping a splash name was going to show up, and that's not what happened here. You know, but I wish him luck. Obviously,
I would say this though, and I know once again, like, you don't mainline the Nats like I do. It's a name everyone that watches the Nats and has been watching the Nats still knows. He only played here for a year, but he played over 100 games that year. Like I said, had a moment with Colco. I get it. Splashy would be nice, but Splashy doesn't exist outside of Ryan Zimmerman, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, guys who are all still
Jason
playing
Worth,
right now.
Jason
Worth. Worth would be splashy, but Worth ain't going to do this. He ain't that good. Like,
yeah,
I've heard
okay.
that dude talk. Like, that would excite people, but it would be a crappy broadcast for all intents and purposes. So I don't know who checks all of those boxes that would get people excited and be good. I trust this decision, though. Like I said, I like it. I'm not going to tell you I love it yet.
I think after reading all this, I think they got a pro, and that's the good news. Like, I think they got a pro, and I'm not against him. I'm just saying, I don't know. This is like when I was yelling about the Wizards. I'm like, Chris Webber's available. Go talk to him. That's a splat. He knows what he's doing. It's an enormously splashy thing. He's associated with the organization. I don't know what he costs, but like, you know, go do something, because that would bring me back to the broadcast. If somehow Ryan Zimmerman or Jason Worth was doing this job, that would bring me back to the broadcast, because I have a strong, strong feeling towards those guys.
I think,
and nothing against Kevin, but you know what I mean?
I'll say
you know
this,
what I
though.
Mean.
Solid and boring is going to be better than the guy that makes a name, though. Because then if you realize he sucks, you're not going to watch the broadcast even less than you do before. And so, like I said, fan like me who watches every night regardless, I'm fine with the solid choice over the sexier choice. So,
all right.
Like I said, and like you mentioned Worth, I've heard Worth talk, man. It's boring. Like, it's not.
Okay.
And he also wouldn't give you the stories you'd want anyways. I think Franzen is going to give you some stories about the clubhouse. He played with Harper for a couple years, so every time they play the Phillies, he's going to have something on that. And he didn't play with Scherzer, which is interesting too, though. So he's not in that modern era of Nats, but 2012, 13, 14, those guys did stick around for a few more years, and he's going to know some of the guys in the franchise. So I think
Who was the shirtless dude? He didn't want to do it?
Oh,
Dozier?
Dozier? No, I think Dozier's still trying to play. I think he had a deal with somebody. So yeah, I think he's still
playing. All right. Yeah, the other one too. I mean, Strasburg's still pitching, but he ain't going to be good at that either. Oh my God!
I think you underestimate. I think you underestimate
future.
Strasburg.
Oh God!
He's got a little. I'm trying to think of who his comparison. Like, he could be. He's a little more Belichick than you think. I think he's a lot funnier than you realize. He just needs to like
Eli. He's our Eli.
Yeah,
Manning.
Maybe a little Eli. Maybe a little Eli. Maybe not that funny, because Eli is legitimately good, but Steven Strasburg's sneaky funny if it's in a lighthearted like interview or mood like that. So you know, don't discount him is what I'm getting at.
All right. Well, I'm glad that's settled now. So now we know what's happening.
Yeah,
that's good. We got that settled. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll play a clip from the first mock drafts coming out, which basically say that Washington will have their pick of the litter at 11 at quarterback if they want to, because no one deserves a top 10 pick. Bray wants to show ESPN 630 Sports Capital.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.